Hapse meydane
Evgeyle My name is Mshin Sokoni. Apparently I have an alias by the name of Honorable Tim Famadi. We're supposed to be sharing this session. The chairperson of Standing Committee on Finance. He was supposed to chair this session. However, he's got other commitments. So on his behalf, I will chair this session. I just wanted to say to colleagues, I don't know, I didn't see everyone drinking tea, you know. And that's why we're having difficult starting, because we didn't see everyone drinking tea. But if you have done that, do you know the person next to you? Very well. No, you're saying you know very well. You're sitting alone. I can't know these people very well. Now, we're going to start very soon, colleagues. We're just tidying up a few knots. We'll start very soon. I wish everyone can come closer. Mamu Kesra. Where is the National Treasury? They are here sitting right at the back. I want them here. may I invite the House Chair to come and sit with us here in front? House Chair Bapela, are you around? There's a pulpit next to me on my left. I can't see you. No, they're not here. Thank you. May I take this opportunity to welcome all of you members. Some members are new from different committees. It looks like others are not back yet, or others are committed with, are committed in other committees. I know a few members from the ANC, the chairperson, are committed in other committees because they serve in other committees as well. But those of us who are here are going to continue with this important work. Today we are having a very important workshop on the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act. I see it's a bill that is attracting a lot of attention because clearly it's going to transform how this parliament is going to work and will bring, obviously, our voters closer to decision-making by participating in the process of amending of bills. I would really like to take this opportunity to welcome as well the chairperson, House Chair, who is busy with other matters. I think they are having a workshop, but he has agreed to come and open this workshop for us because of its importance. Thank you very much for sacrificing your other important work to come and join us here. I hope that you will have time to engage in discussions that are going to take place here. This workshop, colleagues, we convened it because of this new act. You remember that this act was only enacted in April. Not many people are aware of it. I think that ourselves are not very familiar with it. That's why then we decided that we have this workshop, and also to say how are we going to implement it. With the other acts, at least there had been some kind of a program of implementation. I remember your Public Finance Management Act. It was implemented over a period of 9 years. Maybe I might be exaggerating, but over a period of time. The Municipal Finance Management Act as well was also phased in over a period of time. This one, there is no provision in the Act for that, whether we phase in over a period of time or we do it. It means that we, the members of Parliament, must take that decision. And this workshop then is intended to assist us to do that. But we have invited the chairperson here to give us a direction. Maybe I should give him, and I should give this opportunity over to him to give us a way forward. Thank you very much. Now I respect you, Chair. I want you to speak seated.
Technological disadvantage. Good morning, honorable members and ladies and gentlemen. And indeed, the Money Amendment Bill is going to be one piece of legislation that is going to excite a lot of interest in society. And then indeed, Parliament is going to be judged in terms of its implementation of the law. We dare fail, obviously, there will still be expressions out there in society that Parliament is weak, is toothless, it can't bite, and so forth, as was the case in the said Parliament. But that said Parliament has really produced a legislation now, finally, as dictated to by Section 77, bracket 3 of the Constitution. The Constitution requires that an Act of Parliament must provide for a procedure to amend bills. Legislation outlining such a procedure was initially drafted by the Treasury in the past, but due to concern regarding the extent to which it empowered Parliament to amend money because the legislation was never tabled. The Treasury backtracked on the matter because obviously it really was not empowering Parliament at all. And subsequently, the Parliament then did establish a task team on oversight and accountability. Fortunately, I was the chair myself of that co-chair of that particular task team on oversight and accountability. And within it, we had a focus group, which then began to look at the principles. And then after that, then those principles were then formulated into a draft bill, which was considered by the then Portfolio Committee on Finance, which is no more. We now have a Portfolio Committee called Standing Committee on Portfolio Committee and the Appropriation Committee, Standing Committee on Appropriation. So the Portfolio Committee on Finance, therefore, has disappeared as a result of the inaction of this particular legislation. When I was addressing a meeting of the Standing Committees on Public Accounts in last week in Johannesburg, all of them had met nationally and provincially. I did indicate to them that the three standing committees, finance, appropriation, and SCOPA to some extent, must have 100% knowledge on this particular law. There's no escape on it, and then you being members of the Finance Committee and the Appropriation, I think it's going to be your responsibility to know the law, even when you are sleeping. The portfolio committees, because they'll be having a role, other portfolio committees, I just said they must at least 30% of the knowledge of the law, because if themselves are going to be approaching the appropriation committee to say, we think as a portfolio committee and have arrived at the decision that a certain item in the budget we are not agreeing to, and we are proposing for an amendment, or the whole budget we don't agree to, and we are proposing the following amendments, they have to convince yourself. So to come into the Appropriation Committee to say, we have considered the issues, we are making the following proposals, these are the motivations, and then you have to engage them quite thorough, and so forth. So your knowledge, therefore, is going to be more appropriate than they will probably be to have, they will have looked at issues, but their knowledge of the law on their side will be just be 30%, because they will be only bringing budgetary issues or certain items within the budget that they are not satisfied with, and they are calling for an amendment that must be processed by yourself. You will have the power to agree with them or not agree with them as the Appropriation Committee. So that knowledge, therefore, of engaging on substance issues is going to be residing with yourself. The report on the panel of experts, which has not yet been tabled in Parliament and is due for tabling very soon to the John Rules Committee. And I'm just going to take an issue out of that particular report, even though it's not yet tabled before Parliament. In reviewing the amendment of the money bill, they've raised a number of concerns, including those from the Treasury and other actors, about Parliament's ability. What is Parliament's ability? And I think when the presentation is going to be done, the Parliament will then indicate whether indeed the ability is there, the knowledge is there, the capacity is there. The concerns relate, among others, the balancing of expenditure with revenue generation. When you say no, and if you say yes, what will be the balance around that particular issue? And will the balance also not affect the budget changes that you will be proposing at that particular point in time, and how those changes are going to be affected? The second concern is the disruption of budget cycles. And I think when the officials will be presenting here, they'll indicate and point out on those particular cycles. And therefore, do we then want to change them fundamentally? Or you then amend the law to then be realigned with those particular budget cycles or not? The third area that is raised is the inadequate resources within Parliament to analyze the full implications of the budgetary matter on adjustments. That inadequate resources that we do not have as Parliament, what is it that we are proposing in the implementation of the law in terms of those? The fourth area that the panel of experts is raising is that it does agree that the ability by Parliament to amend money bills is necessary. However, it is going to be very complex. It's going to require thorough procedures and significant expansion of capacity within Parliament itself. So, obviously, the task team that was established will be presenting here. It's made up of officials from NA, committee section, NCOP, legal services, and others. We have just grouped. I just grouped them because part of my responsibility of the as House Chairperson for committees, it includes the implementation of the oversight model as a whole, including the whole section of the on the money amendment bill. So I have put in this task team really to then begin to go through the money amendment bill, identify the phased-in approach implementation, which are the sections that we can immediately start. As we have already started as this parliament, we have set up an appropriation committee, which is a committee on its own, and then the finance committee, the new committee, is still there. So we have already started to implement what the law requires Parliament to do. And part of this exercise today, therefore, is to empower yourself and then also go into the buy-in process that we'll be proposing in terms of the implementation phases. Secondly, it requires that we ought to change the rules of Parliament because the committee mandates might differ when it comes to the appropriation committee itself. It could not just be general mandates as conferred to other portfolio committees. We then have to look at the law, what the law says, and then begin to then give an expression in the rules of Parliament about this committee on appropriation. I think when the input is presented, I think it will also indicate around those what are the other areas of the rules of Parliament that ought to be processed. And there's a process in Parliament, there's a joint parliamentary joint rules review that once we have already identified those rules and we make proposals, they have to go to that review. So that indeed the rules can then stand and be adopted by the Joint Rules Committee itself. The other issue that is going to be a challenge to Parliament, which is more political, is the issue of the independence of Parliament. And I'll put it in open and loose quotes, independence of Parliament. The expectation by society, civil society organizations, the media, is to see a parliament that is independent of the executive. But then the constitution, when you read, it says we all have distinct mandates. We are independent of each other, but we are interrelated. So it didn't just give an absolute independence on Parliament to do as it wants. It is independent, but it's also interrelated. So how then do we balance that distinct mandate, the independency, and the interrelation? And it then goes on the Constitution to then express that in that functioning and then fulfilling of the mandate, it calls on all three spheres to be enjoined in the achievement of a better life for people. So that balancing, that political balancing is going to be required in the implementation of the law itself. So the independence that is expected of by other people who wants to see a more independent parliament might not be something that is going to be as classified by them, but yes, will be independent within the confinement of the Constitution itself, because the separation of powers, it dictates on how we ought to behave and function within our own mandates without encroaching in each other's law. And then the law, therefore, then sees the amendment of the money bill, and I think that political balancing is going to be. However, yes, the law will serve as a powerful tool for Parliament to exercise oversight over the executive policy priorities. It's going definitely to really be that particular powerful tool. The other challenges also I've already alluded to are in the rules, but also the time frames generally. You know, it's, the laws, it gives ministers 3 days or 7 days in some instances, and then when the committee section then presents, it will also then indicate the challenges around those particular issues that we ought then to look at in relation to the law, whether we amend the law in terms of realigning the time frames to be more adequate, giving time to whoever needs to respond, and so forth. So as I already indicated, it's going to be a phased-in approach, and also a task team will then be presenting the bill itself. I hope when you discuss and engage those issues that I've really sharply raised, that people will be engaging on. I was given only 10 minutes to speak. I don't want to take the chair's hospitality to my advantage, and I think I'll stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, House Chair. I think that you have set you have given the direction, especially with those questions. And I think that as the meeting progresses, it must address those questions. We will not engage directly now in the speech, but I hope that members have taken your speech into account, especially when the discussion starts. I don't know if, honorable members and ladies and gentlemen, if all of us, we do have a program. If not, then we'll try to distribute to those people that don't have. Our next speaker is supposed to be Advocate Jenkins, who will speak on the background of the Act, and then followed by Ms. Manner on the implications of this Act. House Chair, I had asked if you're going to be around. Okay, I hope that by the time we engage in discussion, you will still be around, so that when we respond to those questions, we should engage in the question that you have raised. Thank you.
Good morning, members and colleagues. Should I proceed, sir? I'm not sure. Thank you very much. I was introduced by the chair. My name is Frank Jenkins. I'm a legal advisor at Parliament since 2001, December 2001, and I was part of the staff supporting the committees that processed this legislation. I will try and keep my presentation within the 20 minutes. I will keep it within the 20 minutes that I was given. So I'll finish just after 11 o'clock. Fine. I'm just seeing if everything technical is correct. I think just as an introduction, but a lot has been said by the chair on the constitutional context of the A lot has been said on the constitutional context in which this piece of legislation fits. Obviously, we are aware of the separation of powers, and we are aware of the issue that Parliament, one of Parliament's primary functions, I would say, besides passing legislation, is to maintain oversight over the exercise of national executive authority, including the implementation of legislation. And one of the tools that was that the Constitution then envisaged would be reporting to Parliament, but the teeth in that would be then to adopt or to adapt, rather, the budgets of departments to the performance, in fact. However, as was mentioned earlier, Section 77.3 says that when you want to tinker with the money bills, in other words, the budget, you must have a process in national legislation. The Constitution also says that a money bill must be considered in terms of Section 75. So the procedure to pass a money bill is set out in the Constitution, and then one must read in there must be additional procedures set out in national legislation if you want to amend those money bills. So it's not just a super majority or a different way of voting in the House. One must think of something else. So then that gave rise to Parliament in asking through the Joint Rules Committee to draft an oversight and accountability model to look at this issue specifically. The Joint Rules Committee set up a task team to draft this oversight and accountability model. The structure of that project was that there were three focus groups, projects, budgets, and committees. And this bill comes out of the budget, or started there at the budget task team, part of the oversight and accountability model. If one looks at the oversight and accountability model, in the ATC, I think it was the beginning of this year it was published, one finds those linkages, clear linkages there. So from the oversight and accountability model, which was reported to the Joint Rules Committee in March of last year, the Assembly mandated the Portfolio Committee on Finance to draft and introduce a bill that gives effect to Section 77.3. A procedure to amend money bills in addition to the Section 75 procedure. And that was published in the Government Gazette 10 July 2008. Now, members and guests, you know, we have a technical problem. It looks like it. My presentation, I hope, was handed out to everybody here. Because if you would like to research or look at those references in there, I've put the Government Gazette number in there, the ATC numbers and so on. That's the one that's in the front page. It's just money bills. It starts like that. That's the front page. That's the only page I'm accessing at the moment. So it's in there, and I'm on the second page now. Third page, in fact, after the title page. But to continue, the bill was then introduced by the Portfolio Committee, passed by the National Assembly, referred to the National Council of Provinces, and after some proposed amendments, passed by the National Assembly again on 19 February 2009. And the Act was signed and then promulgated, which is published 16 April 2009. So that Act is now in operation. It came into operation on the 16th of April, but as the Chair said, the function is on Parliament, or the duties on Parliament to implement the Act. It's a procedure Parliament can use to give effect to its oversight functions in the Constitution. The principles underlying the Act, I think it's quite important to understand the principles and then to the system which the Act used to create this procedure to amend money bills. I would say one of the first principles that we have to look at is the a constitutional obligation for cooperative government. In simple terms, it says that your different spheres, and within each sphere, where there's a separation of powers, though it doesn't use that name explicitly, government must support each other as well as not stand on each other's toes, not try and usurp the functions and the powers of other government departments. Keeping that in mind, where the Constitution allows only the Minister of Finance to introduce a money bill, yet giving Parliament the discretion to amend bills and giving that legislative function to Parliament, the Act tries to, as well as the issue of that policy formation resides with the National Executive. Within that paradigm, Parliament is trying to create this money bill, or tried to create this money bill, which we have now have done. So the bill does not set out to create policy or to amend policy, but to implement policy and to maintain oversight over the legislation that's set out there. So it's going to be a matter of interpretation. When a portfolio committee finds that there's a certain policy that the government has adopted, made, there's legislation that gives effect to that policy, yet the programs that that department is implementing might not speak specifically to the policy, and that's the interpretation issue. I'll return to that because what the Act then tries to do, it tries to set certain parameters wherein the budget may be amended. And there's a, what I would call the perimeter and then a narrower circle inside, which we call fiscal discipline. The parameter, I'm going over to more of the procedure, what the Act envisages now, the budget or oversight cycle. What the Act first does is it says, okay, we have the oversight issues. So Parliament must annually evaluate through its committees the performance of government departments. And this will be contained in what the Act calls a budgetary review and recommendation report. That budgetary review and recommendation report, as I said, is an annual assessment. It's connected to issues of service delivery, effectiveness, and efficiency. And it may include recommendations on the forward use of resources. So the timing of those budget reports is also very significant, because what one sees is that those budget reports must be tabled and adopted by the House before the Houses adopt the reports on the medium-term budget policy statements. And there's a specific reason for that. And the reason being that part of the budgetary review and recommendation report will be focused from the annual report submitted by departments before the end of October each year. So Parliament will have to create systems to finalize these reports, as well as other issues, the Section 32 reports that the National Treasury publish on actual spending and revenue, and analyze all of this information to come up with a position in your budget review and recommendation reports. When the medium-term budget policy statement, this is sort of your second phase, when that is tabled around about September, middle of September each year, I'm becoming part of the technical problem. When that is tabled, there's specific issues within that MTBPS that must be tabled. We're pretty aware that the medium-term expenditure framework will be part of the MTBPS usually. So we're looking now at the forward spending of government in the MTBPS. We're not dealing with, for instance, this year's budget. We're dealing with next year's budget. And once again, the Parliament will have to adopt reports on the MTBPS, more specific to what we're doing at this point in time. And these two reports, which I've now discussed, the budget review and recommendation reports and the report on the MTBPS, will of course be sent to the Minister of Finance, like any resolution of the House pertaining to those issues. Minister of Finance, therefore, has a clear indication, and one can say Cabinet has a clear indication, because the effective members of Cabinet will also get copies of these reports, will have a clear indication what Parliament's view is on the forward budget, the next year's budget, and the medium-term expenditure framework. Come February the following year, come February next year, when the budget is introduced, the Act requires the Minister to table responses. One can say, what must be in the budget? There must be a fiscal framework, which I will discuss now, your Division of Revenue Bill, Appropriation Bill, revenue proposals, and then your reply, the Minister's response to the Budget Review and Recommendation Report and the MTBPS reports, whether the Minister has taken up the recommendations Parliament has made or the reasons for not taking those up. Okay. And therefore, there's a type of dialectic, a discussion between Parliament and the executive, between the legislature and the executive on those issues. We're at the stage now of the introduction of the budget. I would call that the third step. The first sub-step, the first foot, then, would be the fiscal framework, which the Committee on Finance will have to consider. There is, at this point in time when the budget is introduced, there is a chapter usually in the big book on fiscal framework. The Act tries to make it more specific, and it requires Parliament to adopt the fiscal framework, to look at it specifically and to adopt it. So it's at that point where Parliament will go and evaluate the Minister's responses to the Budget Review and Recommendation Report and to the reports on the MTBPS, and to see whether Parliament approves the fiscal framework or whether the Parliament wants to amend the fiscal framework. It's important to say fiscal framework because we're not going to amend fiscal policy. As I say, in terms of your cooperative government, that is the domain of the executive. Once the fiscal framework has been approved by Parliament, that is one of the parts of that outer perimeter which will determine how Parliament may amend the budget or money bills, both the revenue side and the expenditure side. The second step is the Division of Revenue Bill, which in terms of Section 214 of the Constitution determines the equitable share received by governments in different spheres and within each sphere. In terms of the Act, your Division of Revenue Bill must, of course, comply with your fiscal framework that was adopted by Parliament, and together they form the outer perimeter. All other amendments to money bills, whether it's your appropriation bill or whether it's your taxation laws amendment bills or any other money bill, whether it's a levy that's amended or introduced, must comply with your fiscal framework and your Division of Revenue Bill. As I say, that's the outer perimeter. In this phase, the Parliament will now consider the budget, the appropriation bill. And maybe I must just stop here and say that the present procedure is very similar to what the Act envisaged in the sense that Parliament refers the appropriation bill to the Committee, or the Committee on Finance, which is now the Standing Committee on Finance, and during that 1 week, that committee must debate and report back to the House on the principles of the budget, which is roughly, not exactly the same, but it amounts to more or less considering the fiscal framework, whether we approve this bill. Then we have that first reading debate, and then different votes get referred to different committees. The Act changes that a little bit. I'm not exactly sure how all of that will work, or leave that to the table staff to discuss, but whether the votes will go now to both the portfolio committees and the Committee on Finance, or the Committee on Appropriations, I would say, and how those will relate to something that needs to be discussed, I think, in the end. Any case, the appropriation bill is considered by Parliament. There's a specific time frame for it, 4 months from the introduction or from the start of the financial year, which is the same as what the Public Finance Management Act allows for interim or spending before the budget is passed. And in the appropriation bill stage, if there is amendments proposed, these amendments must be proposed in line with, if one looks at the Act, Section 8.3, which is principles, in for lack of other words, principles of fiscal discipline. So those issues must be taken into consideration when Parliament wants to amend it, as well as when a portfolio committee wants to propose an amendment or encourage the Committee on Appropriations to make an amendment, as well as civil society trying to make submissions or making submissions, I should say, civil society making submissions on the budget, they should also look at that because Parliament cannot consider a proposed amendment or a submission which falls outside those boundaries. The revenue proposals will be tabled with the budget, although as is presently done, but the taxation laws amendment bill will come later. Now, the revenue proposals, there's not much to be said about that.
But I just wanted to assure Advocate Jenkins that we are not going anywhere. We are not catching any flights. We have just arrived in Cape Town. So he's moving a little bit too fast. I wish he can just, you know, move from one point to the other. So So he's really very, very fast. I know he's not catching a flight out of Cape Town as well. Thank you.
Advocate Jenkins. So you understand.
My apologies, sir.
I'm sorry, Advocate Jenkins. I think, thank you, comrade, for raising the point of moving fast. We'll just ask him to at least relax a bit. There will be a number of presentations, and we will engage, so we'll not ask him to restart again. But there will be presentations which... Don't worry. Continue.
My apologies for that. Honourable Chair, in the interest of what was just discussed, let's just say that when the budget is introduced, there's that system of adopting the fiscal framework first. Once that is done, your division of revenue bill follows. Once the division of revenue bill in the fiscal framework has been adopted by Parliament, it sets the outer perimeter in which Parliament may then manoeuvre to amend any other money bill for that financial year. But there's also internal constraints on Parliament, which is in that Act, and that's in Section 8.3 and in Section 11.3. 11.3 is specifically to do with revenue bills, your taxation laws bills. Not necessary, I think, for the purpose of this discussion to go into the details of that. But what is important to realize is that even the amendment to the Division of Revenue Bill must comply with your principles in Section 8.3. And in fact, it would be unlawful for Parliament to make an amendment to a money bill that falls out of those principles set out in Section 8.3 or that goes beyond the fiscal framework that's adopted. The procedure for the adjustments budget actually closes the circle because the adjustments budget usually, although there can be more than one adjustments budget in a year, but usually it's introduced with the MTBPS. So that comes back to that circle. And part of that, part of the MTBPS, well, we get the adjustments budget usually in there. There's nothing that says it may only be in there. And we'll then get your medium-term expenditure framework, which will just shift 1 year on. It's a three-year budget, so this year's MTBPS, which your medium-term expenditure framework, will just add another year to it. Thank you. That is the budget cycle, what the Act envisages. So what the procedure is then, if we want to discuss the procedure or the background to this procedure, it is trying to set a predictable area or predictable line where in Parliament will operate to amend the budget based on its oversight function. But in fact, it is busy with a legislative function when it amends the budget. And that is how it was considered, that we're not going to work with the procedure in terms of what Section 75 said, but just on that. Other related matters, and as I, there are other presentations, I think there's a presentation on committees and specific committee functions. Maybe just very generally, there's four committees being established by the Act with different functions that will fulfill the functions in the Act. There's a Parliamentary Budget Office that's been established by the Act, which is supposed to support the committees with their functions primarily. They can also do other functions. There's a presentation on that. As you might be aware, this year there was amendments to the appropriation bill proposed by the minister. The Act allows that. It was actually the first time the Act was used. Those amendments must be of a technical nature, must be to effect technical corrections to the Act or its technical amendments. And it doesn't have to follow the cycle set out in the Act. And then, as Mr. Sigourney will recall, the NCOP introduced the issue of norms and standards for provinces, which was then accepted by the National Assembly, which is now in the Act to keep a sort of a uniform system throughout the country, because the Act, well, the Constitution allows provinces also to introduce a procedure to amend provincial budgets in their provincial legislation. So there's norms and standards set up for them in there. Honourable Chair, once again, I'm sorry that I had to rush. Maybe my clock is fast, but that's my 20 minutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Advocate Jenkins. I'm sure we'll make up when other people present and we engage in discussion. Honourable members, I'm noting Honourable members' thoughts. The suggestion that I would like to make is that we do not engage Honourable Jenkins as of now, because the input that is going to follow is an input that is related to it, but it's a more operational, what you call, input. So they are related in that way. The questions that will raise sometimes may be responded to by the input that is going to be made by Ms. Nene. I would like to suggest that we give her the chance to continue. However, Honorable Swart, let's hear what you want to suggest.
Engage Advocate Jenkins. I just want, for purpose of clarity, maybe to say that the technical matters which he referred to, and this is just for the other members as well, where the minister can change matters of a technical nature. The example we had was the bill that the minister now introduced with regard to the new departments that has been formed. So the splitting of the minerals department and the energy department. So those are the technical bills that he changed. So he can't change the actual budget itself, but it's the technical nature of it. That is what Advocate Jenkins referred.
Thank you very much. So it was the, as the House Chair said, that was the beginning of the operation of this Act with that Section 14. I would just like to request the people who are going to make input, especially you, Ms. Lynn, because you're the next one, is that just assume that when you present, people know nothing. Let's not assume that people know something, because many people are new. Let's not assume that people know nothing, especially even in the usage of the technology. Let's not just take for granted that people know the difference between your fiscal framework and the review of budgets. People would understand what is necessary, those kind of things entail. If you can, just a little bit, what you call, clarify those kind of things, so that we don't have to have those questions of clarifications on those areas. Well, the other thing that we may not want to call it necessarily, but the House Chair is here. I know the question will arise of on the NCOP side, you know, the question of two committees. But the House Chair is here. Maybe he will respond to that question. Let's then give a hand over to you, Mr.
Thank you, Chairperson. My presentation will start on slide number 3. And the presentation is more based on operational issues in terms of saying what does the Act mean for committees, what is expected out of committees, what committees are supposed to do. In slide number 3, it starts by saying the implications. The Act gave birth to 4 committees in Parliament. It is the birth certificate to these 2 appropriation committees, one for the NOP and one for the National Assembly, and the 2 standing committees on finance, for both houses. The NA has two committees. It separated the two committees, but the NOP has clustered those committees. So it's a led committee on appropriation and finance. Now what we need to come up in front is to say what is the impact of the act to Parliament, because we have an act, Parliament is moving. So it means that now Parliament has to implement this act. What does that mean? We have a framework in Parliament, we have a parliamentary program that is there. So it means that the act is going to have an impact to the parliamentary program that is there, the framework of parliamentary program, in the sense that the act has deadlines that it has for committees and for parliaments to do certain things. And then we go to slide number 4. We say at the same time again, it has an impact because currently committees has a way in which they operate, in which they function. Committees are expected to have their programs that are approved by the House Chairperson. Now, what does the Act say when it comes to those programs? Automatically, it has an impact because now the deadlines will have an impact to the programs of committees. It means that committees, when they plan their work, they have to take into account now the deadlines and the impact of the Act to those programs. Again, it means that we have to look at the rules of Parliament, because we have the rules that refers to conferral. It means that committees now have to have a different approach when they do their work. They have to have a coordinated approach now when they do their work. There's an issue that was mentioned by my colleague in terms of the when committees are expected to do the review of performance of departments. And all those review, those reports, the committees, they're supposed to refer those reports to the standing committees on appropriation and finance. Now, how is that going to happen? That's the coordinated approach that I'm referring to. And it means that even these committees, in terms of their programs, they have to make sure that they take that into account when they do their own planning, to make sure that even the other committees, in terms of their programs, when they are planning, how are they going to make sure that once they are done with those recommendations, how are they going to reach this particular program? Parliament is its own. It has to put in place mechanisms to make sure that whether these recommendations in terms of the reports of other committees, how are they going to be referred to this particular committee? And then the other impact is finance. Of course, Parliament has to establish the budget office, and at the same time, to establish the new committees, the Standing Committee on Appropriations, the new committee, it had financial implications. On slide number 5, without going into details in terms of the budget cycle, but I felt that before we can say anything about committees, we need to mention the three instances when it comes to budget cycle. That is the tabling of the MTBPS, that is medium-term budget policy statement. In Parliament, it is tabled in October. It is crucial that committees, they take that into account, because the Act is talking about that there should be reports that committees should be doing before that is adopted by Parliament, before MTBPS is adopted by Parliament. And secondly, the Appropriation Bill and the Division of Revenue Bill is tabled in February. That's also going to have an impact in terms of the work of committees. I'm going to talk on that in detail. The Adjustment Appropriation Bill is tabled together with the MTBPS in October. What impact will that have in terms of the work of committees as well? On slide number 6, the Act refers to Budgetary Review and Recommendations Report. It says that before the National Assembly adopts the MTBPS, the portfolio committees, that means all the committees of the National Assembly, should review the performance of the departments that they oversee and report to the House on their findings. when they review the performance of the departments, of course, it's about service delivery, what the departments have done in terms of the money that has been allocated to departments. Have they implemented the policies? Have the policies improved the lives and better the lives of the people of South Africa? Now for the committees to do that, there will be a time frame. A time frame in the sense that the MTBPS is usually tabled in Parliament towards the end of October. Then it means that before it is adopted by Parliament, when you look at the records of Parliament, it is adopted towards the end of November. Then it means that when it's adopted by the end of November, all committees should have done the assessment and review the performance of department. And once that has been done, all that information should have been referred to these committees to look at that information so that that information can be sent to Treasury so that Treasury can have that information when they are tabling, they take that information into account when they're tabling the budget in February. So this is very crucial, and now it also comes back to the issue of the program of Parliament. Will Parliament provide committees an opportunity in its program to be able to do this? In the next slide, I'm referring to say time to be allocated to committees to review this. And then what we need to look at, I'm saying in brackets 2 weeks, that is the proposal that we are saying. 2 weeks, the first 2 weeks in October, to say committees, you need to review the performance of department. The reason we're saying the first 2 weeks in October, we're saying that in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, PFMA, at the end of September, all the departments are supposed to table their annual reports in Parliament. The annual reports that are going to indicate the performance of the department, how they spend the money and everything else. Then the committees can use that information to review the performance of the department. On top of that, the committees can also use the monthly reports and the quarterly reports that are published by Treasury on expenditure of the departments. There's also reports from the Auditor General's office in terms of the expenditure of the departments. There are also findings by the SCOPA, Public Accounts Committees, on the expenditure of departments, reports of the departments, whether they are qualified or not. With all that information, it means that committees will be able to assess and review the performance of the departments and will be able to put together a report to be tabled to the House in terms of the performance of the department they are overseeing. Now, the question that I ask there is to say that how will Parliament refer these particular reports to the appropriation committees? Of course, committees, they report through publishing their reports in the ATC. The ATC is the document that is announcement tablings and committees, where the committees, they publish their reports. Will these committees be expected to retrieve that information from that document? Or will these reports from the different committees, are they going to be tabled in the House and then the House is going to refer them formally to these committees for these committees to use them? So that is the question that we need to look at, and as Parliament to put mechanisms in place. Now, the Act is silent in terms of saying what is the role of the NCOP in terms of reviewing the performance of the department, because it only refers to the portfolio committees. And now what we are saying is that there is nothing stopping the NCOP committees to join the National Assembly committees when they do the review, because there is a rule in terms of conferral. Committees can do the work jointly when they review the performance of the departments, and then they can table the report jointly to report on the performance of the departments. Next slide. I think I'm done with the issue of the review and then tabling of the reports.
Thank you.
there's an issue of the MTPPS. As I said before, it is usually tabled at the end of October each year. Now the Act is giving a deadline, a number of days. It is saying that committees must report after 30 working days. And these 30 working days, it excludes the constituency period, and it excludes the public holidays, and it excludes weekends. So it should be 30 working days. Now, when I did the presentation, I used the current framework of parliamentary program. It means that when you take into account, what does that mean? The 30 days, how long will it take? How much time will committees have? Because if MTPPS is tabled at the end of October, it means that committees will have to report, if we are counting the days, working days, the next year in February. Because at the same time, committees, after they reported, their report should be submitted to the minister so that the minister can take into account the issues that are raised by committees so that he has to be able to respond when he tables his budget the following year. Next slide, please. In reality, I'm trying here to unpack the 30 days that has been given to Parliament. In reality, if the MTPPS is tabled at the end of October, Parliament has 16 working days in November. That means committees, the committee will have 3 hours in a week. That means in November, committees will have 12 hours to work to consider the MTPPS. At the same time, in January, every year, the last 2 weeks are allocated to committees to do their work, the last 2 weeks in January. And those 2 weeks, they translate into 8 working days. And still, committees will need 6 working days in February to complete the 30 days. And then it means that now we spill over to February the following year. And now the practice is that the budget is tabled the 3rd week of February. The minister will have a week to consider the recommendations made by Parliament. The question that I'm asking, is this sufficient time for the minister? Because the minister is expected to respond why he did not take into account some of the recommendations made by Parliament. But if Parliament is going to give the minister those recommendations a week before, I'm sure by that time the minister is always done, has completed the budget. It's just the final touches of the budget. So by raising this, it says that, is that 30 days workable? Is it enough? Do we have to review the 30 days? Is it not to say that, how about tabling the MTPPS earlier in October than tabling it later in October so that we can give Parliament enough time to accommodate the 30 days so that by the time at least Parliament adjourns in November, it is done with the, it can submit the report to the minister so that the minister has enough time to do whatever. But I'm sure that it's up to the task team to make those proposals, the task team that is responsible for implementation of the Act. Now we come to the fiscal framework and revenue proposals. It is tabled in February together with the appropriation bill and the division of revenue bill. Previously, it was just tabled. There was no need for it to be referred to committees, for committees to consider it and to report and it to be adopted. It was just one of the documents that was just tabled. But in terms of the Act now, the Act states that it should be referred to the Select Committee and the Standing Committee on Finance at the same time. And both committees are expected to meet at the same time and conduct public hearings jointly. And they're expected to report at the same time to both houses. Now, the question that we're having around this area is the time frame that is given to committees. By the way, not only to committees, to Parliament as a whole, because Parliament is given 16 days after tabling of the national budget, that is the appropriation bill, that they need to report. And the report should state clearly whether they accept or they are going to amend. So those committees, they need to do that. But the challenge is the time that is given, that is the 16 days. Because within that 16 days, 2 days before they report, they should give their report to the minister so that the minister can respond on the issues that are raised by committees. It means that in reality, Parliament doesn't have 16 days. The committees will have 14 days to do all that particular work. Now, the question that we're having, the Act is saying that committees are supposed to facilitate public participation. Public participation, if you need to facilitate public participation, you need to ask yourself the nature of the public participation that committees are going to facilitate. To what extent, if you are going to have 16 days to do that? Are you going to have extensive public participation, or are you just going to invite the usual stakeholders? Because if you are going to invite the usual stakeholders, that 16 days will suffice. Because you just write to them, you invite them, they come and do their presentation, and then you are done. But if you are going to do an extensive and normal public participation, you need 2 weeks, 14 days to invite people. If you are going to use the media, newspapers, to invite everybody, those who are interested, to come and give their input. So that 16 days becomes a challenge. And in terms of the Act, it says that the fiscal framework should be adopted by the third week of March. So that is the challenge when it comes to the issue. Can you go back to slide number 13? It becomes a challenge when we go to the deadline of the 16 days. That is the issue that we need to look at. And the challenge it becomes to the facilitation of the public participation. If there was no issue of facilitation of public participation, it was going to be a bit easier. But now you have to call public hearings jointly, and then it becomes an issue. Unless we are saying it's not going to be an extensive public participation. The next slide. We come to the issue of division of revenue. The division of revenue, it's a bill that should follow the procedures that are stated in Section 76(1) of the Constitution. And the Act, it says that after the adoption of the fiscal framework, the division of revenue will be referred to the Standing Committee on Appropriation Bill of the National Assembly. Usually the National Assembly doesn't take long when it deals with DORA. Usually it takes a week and it's done with DORA and then it's referred to the NCOP. That is the current practice. I'm not saying that it's still going to happen, but the current practice, they take a week and they are done. They refer it to the NCOP. The Act is saying that Parliament, NA and NCOP processes, it gives them 35 days to consider DORA, and it should be passed and be finalized. Next slide. What are the implications of this? Because DORA is a Section 76 bill, if you calculate the six-week cycle in that 35 days, it means that NCOP has to use 30 days of that 35 days, and the National Assembly will be left with 5 days to deal with DORA. And even that 30 days for the NCOP, it means that there should be nothing that is going to disturb the NCOP within that six-week cycle. So it is feasible within that 35 days to deal with that, provided that there's nothing that is going to interrupt that process in terms of parliamentary program. So that is the implication in terms of the 35 days that has been given. I've mentioned that the 35 days will leave the National Assembly with 5 days, and that 35 days, 3 days should be given to the minister, because the minister must get 3 days from the 35 days to look at the proposed amendments if Parliament is proposing amendments. Therefore, you are left with 32 days. National Assembly will be left with 2 days, and NCOP will be left. NCOP, 30 days is compulsory because it's in terms of the rules of Parliament, and it's in terms of the six-week cycle to give the provinces an opportunity to give their input on that particular bill. So National Assembly is left with only 2 days to deal with that piece of legislation. So that is the challenge when it comes to the time frame given to deal with the DORA. The appropriation bill is tabled together with the fiscal framework DORA in February. It says that it should be passed by Parliament within 4 months after the start of the new financial year, which means that Parliament should pass it by the end of July, because the new financial year starts in April. The current practice is that Parliament usually passes appropriation bill by end of June, which is still on time. And the budget votes and everything else is referred to committees, and committees, they consider that. But now the Act is saying that when Parliament consider appropriation bill, if they are going to propose amendments, the minister must be given 10 days before Parliament passes that act, that bill. Minister must have 10 days to respond to the proposed amendments. Next slide. What are the implications of this? The appropriation bill, I will say, stroke budget votes, because they are referred, budget votes are referred to all the relevant committees, and they have to consider them. The proposal, we put proposal in brackets to say that because there are time frames in the Act, committees should be given at least 2 weeks, because committees are supposed to report on the budget votes that are referred to them. They should be given 2 weeks to consider the budget votes without having plenaries in the afternoon. 2 weeks just be allocated to committees to do the committee work, because during that period, committees are having public hearings. They are inviting the relevant stakeholders to look, to give their input on the budget votes. And we are saying if that has happened, it means that committees will be reporting around the third week of May, and that will give minister enough time. That 10 days can be factored in for minister to consider any proposed amendments by Parliament. Still, we can fit the deadline. We can still fit in within the end of June, House Chairperson, and July can still be constituents. No, I'm saying July can still be constituents. If we are saying committees, if we are saying committees will consider their budget votes in May, can be given 2 weeks to consider the budget votes in May. By third week of May, committees will report. Minister will have enough time, even for EPCs. If EPCs will still be needed, there will be enough time, and the appropriation bill will be passed by end of June. July will still be constituency period. The question that I'm having is the time that is usually allocated to NSOP to consider and report on the appropriation bill. I'm leaving that for these committees and for Parliament to decide. I'll give an example. For this year, NSOP was given half a day to consider appropriation bill. It was referred at night. It was scheduled for debate in the NSOP at 2 the following day. NSOP was expected to meet in the morning at 9, and they were expected to report by 2 o'clock that bill should be ready to be debated in the House at 2. With due respect to the National Assembly, that has been the practice for the NSOP all these years. Is that still going to happen? I'm sorry, Chairperson. Okay, I'm sorry, Chairperson. I'm just raising it so that, okay. Okay, on the National Adjustments Budget, Chairperson, they are tabled in October together with the MTPPS, and they are referred to the Finance Committees of both houses. And they are given 9 working days, both committees, to report on revised fiscal framework. 9 working days. Both committees, they should be reporting there. Within that 9 working days, 2 days, it's for the minister to respond if they are proposing amendments. That is on fiscal framework. On DORA, the Standing Committee on Appropriation, they are given 9 working days again to report, but 4 days is for the minister to report. It means that the Standing Committee has only 5 days to consider that and report. Now, in reality, the committee has 7 working days to report on fiscal framework, and they have 5 working days to report on DORA, because the other days are for the minister to report. Now, the question that we are having is that when it comes to DORA, because DORA is a Section 76 bill, and I said when I prepared the presentation, I looked at the current practice and the current parliamentary program. Currently, when they table the DORA in October, the adjusted DORA, the 6-week cycle doesn't apply. The DORA is just done by NA, referred to NSOP, and then it ends there, as much as it's a Section 76 bill. Now it doesn't follow a Section 76, a 6-week cycle. Is that a correct procedure? And then, are we keeping that practice, or are we going to follow the right procedure? And if we're following the right procedure, what are the implications of that? And the implication is that if DORA, the adjusted DORA in October, is going to follow the 6-week cycle, it means that the 9 working days, it's not feasible for the NSOP. The question that I'm asking again, does the NSOP need 6-week cycle for the revised DORA in October? that should be taken into account by the task team? Does it need that in October? Or is it enough for that just to go to the NSOP and not be referred to provinces? That's another question. I just mentioned that the Act is saying that for any other revenue bill, if Parliament is considering that bill, the Minister must be given 14 days to respond if there are proposed amendments. Chairperson, I thought I need to have a slide referring to the NSOP. The NSOP has clustered the two committees, the Appropriation and the Finance Committee. And the implications to that is that the workload of the two committees from the National Assembly, they go to the same committee in the NSOP with the very same deadlines and how that committee is going to manage that, it's a question mark. And the very same committee shares membership with other committees. For instance, the committee of the NSOP, the two members of that committee are chairpersons of other committees. Now, for that committee to meet and meet those deadlines and with that kind of workload, it's going to be a challenge. And again, the program of Parliament, when it comes to NSOP committee, there's a provincial week for NSOP. That might have an impact when it comes to the deadlines of this Act. There's a program of NSOP, a project of taking Parliament / NSOP to the people. That might also have an impact when it comes to the deadlines of this Act. Chairperson, in terms of our presentation, we are saying in principle the bill can be implemented by Parliament on the basis that parliamentary program is reviewed to accommodate the deadline. The committees review the manner in which they are functioning, all committees, not only these committees. There is a healthy relationship between Parliament and the executive because these deadlines, because the committee has to produce a report with recommendations they have to give to the relevant minister. The minister is expected to respond within a particular time for the committee to be able to do its work. So there should be that understanding between Parliament and the executive in view of the spirit of cooperative government. At the same time. And Chairperson, in terms of implementing immediately, we are saying the BRR can be implemented immediately without reviewing whatever. That can be implemented because the tools to implement that are available. Committees can do that, but it just needs to be managed politically. How is it going to happen? And Chairperson, on a lighter note, if we are saying now we can implement this without reviewing parliamentary program and the deadlines, it means that committees will just focus on implementing this particular act, won't have time to do any other work, like doing oversight and everything else. Because if you look at the cycle and how the deadlines are, when you look at the current parliamentary framework, committees will be left with 1 month to do any other work outside this. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, Ms. Nene, you are provocative. You know, Advocate Jenkins presented, the members were well behaved. Now you started trampling on their toes. I saw my colleague, he's sitting at that side. He's supposed to be sitting next to me, smiling at you, the way you represented the NSOP. on a serious note, thank you very much for the presentation and the way you teased those questions. Members, I understand that there's tea, no? But the tea is there. My suggestion is that, like the timelines that Ms. Manuel was complaining about, we have a problem with time. We did not start on time. The leaders were delayed, most of them, and we couldn't start on time. My suggestion is that those who would like to have tea, maybe one by one, people can take their cup back and come and drink. We do not break. We do not have much time, especially after the members. Members are itching to respond. I hope that they will not only respond to Ms. Manner, but they will respond from the presentation that was made by the House Chair, including everything. But having said that, I just want to, I'm not responding, but just to say that any act of Parliament is not in isolation of other acts. It operates, is meant to strengthen maybe other acts. Like this act is not in contradiction of the Public Finance Management Act, for instance. Like the Municipal Finance Management Act, like your Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act. I think that when we deal with this act, we must also take those acts into account. Because I, maybe this comment would be relevant more when we deal, when we have the workshop of chairpersons. Because the act spells out exactly how it envisages the amendment to be made. Because from what I hear from the passages, it says if we're going to now do away with other processes of the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act, where budget processes are made, we're not going to reinvent the wheel. And I think that what this act does, there were conventions, I mean conventions and traditions that were practiced by Parliament, which were not necessarily written down. I mean, there has been budget since 1994 when this act did not exist. And both houses have dealt with this budget. And when they dealt with budget, it's not that there was no legislation. And the only thing that is being done now is to regulate those relationships and those time frames. My understanding is that some of the time frames are time frames that were taken from those processes. Somewhere this act, I was trying to check, maybe I did not consult my colleague. I know that at their home they eat this act. She would have assisted me. But somewhere it says these committees will have to work together in this process, in the process of budget. So some of the times that we might worry about will be taken, it will take those processes into account. I mean, we should not take that NSOP, for instance, will now have to operate separately altogether. The practice has been that when the budget is presented and the fiscal framework is looked at, both committees have combined. They would present then a report to different houses. So I think that I'm not making what you call a decision, but I'm just saying that this is the practice, and this legislation is not meant to negate that practice. It's only meant to regulate it, to strengthen it. In fact, what it does, this legislation, is to strengthen what we the finance committees had always what you call wanted to do, to ensure that other committees, portfolio committees, are there whether it's during when we deal, especially when the committees are dealing with particular portfolios. So in this article, yes, I told you. so this, what this legislation does, is really to assist us to ensure that now it's no longer a question of a choice, but they should be working together. My colleague has then assisted me, as I indicated, in terms of your Section 12. Though Section 12 is under the, your national adjustment budget, 12.5 says if the minister has tabled the revised fiscal framework, the revised fiscal framework must be referred to a joint sitting of committees on finance for consideration. 6 says if the minister tables a division of revenue amendment bill, the bill must be referred to a joint sitting of the committees on appropriation after the adoption of the fiscal framework by the House committees. There's a number of what they call the clauses here, or sections that deal with the joint, what you call a sitting of the committees. Well, we might worry about the question of time frame, but I think that what we should engage with today is how do we implement this act now. The proof of the pudding must be in the eating. Can I open this another discussion to the House? Is it agreed that... well, what I hope that then the this workshop is meant for members to understand this bill, to engage. I know that other people are in other processes engaging with other processes. The House Chair referred to a review committee, if I'm correct, a panel of experts. House Chair, you know my slogan. I have adopted that slogan of the disabled people. Nothing about us, without us. So whatever happens, it will happen, but at the end it must come to us so that we should make the final decision as the people who are responsible for implementation. Okay. Let me just open it to the House.
Thanks, Comrade Chair. I'm not sure, but the two presenters, I think they have actually loaded me with a lot of information that I'm now reasonably confused. I'm not sure whether when I engage in discussions, I'm not going to be more confused because I will have to try and recollect the information in my mind. But two questions of clarity, Chair. One, it looks like the bill takes for granted that the Minister of Finance will table a budget. It doesn't expect the possibility that the budget may not be submitted by the Minister, because then I'm not hearing any possibility of that and what then would have to happen. And also the next question that I just want for clarity as well is that it looks like right through when it talks about reports or inputs, that must be sent to the minister or the relevant departmental minister. It is taking for granted that the minister will comment back. It doesn't say anything what happens if the minister doesn't apply his or her mind on the inputs that the committees may have made. What next should happen and how do we get out of that kind of a problem? And I think those are the two issues that I just want to hear. How do we get out of them? Because on this particular act, I found nowhere where we have got any recourse to that kind of a situation. And but when it comes to the complications that the last presenter made, I, Ms. Mann, yes, okay. I hope that as long as there is a political position, how this particular act should assist us, the ideologues and whoever, they must find ways of actually trying to get this thing to work, not to reverse the political decisions. They must just find ways of how we get it to work, as long as what we want to see happens. And I think that will be the job that the ideologues or the, what do you call them? The experts. Yes. Thank you very much.
Yeah. No, thank you, Honorable Mashile. But what I would like to suggest is that I think that it was correct for her to raise this question in the context that she understands it. I mean, I did say that she is the manager of the committees. She has a better understanding of how the committees, what you call, operate. But our objective here, it is a workshop. We're not taking decisions. We'll just tease these questions and gauge. The committee will, in their formal, what you call, a meeting, engage now in terms of what is it that we think that should be done in terms of dealing with the questions that we raise. But I think that what we need to do, comrades and colleagues, is just to ensure that we engage, we seek questions of clarity, we engage with these questions. We're not taking any decisions. We'll have our own meeting as committees, where we can take now decisions. I say, in terms of what we had in this meeting, what do we think that should be the way forward? And this is how I see it. So let us engage openly and freely, and so that we don't make officials afraid to engage, because we're going to hammer them. But the other question, I don't want to respond on behalf of officials, but Honorable Mashile, the Constitution, I think that this act, like all the other acts, are based on the, what you call, a Constitution, in that the Constitution does direct that it's only the Minister of Finance who will table the budget. Or is it PFMA? It's also in the PFMA, but also in the Constitution. PFMA, Section 27, National Annual Budget, and I think that there's going to be a workshop on the PFMA. I see Treasury sitting very, very quietly. They will have that workshop on the PFMA. But Section 27 of the PFMA says the Minister must table the annual budget for a financial year in the National Assembly before the start of that financial year, or in exceptional circumstances, on a date as soon as possible after the start of that financial year, as the Minister may determine. So it's only the Minister. If the Minister would fall sick, I suppose the Deputy Minister of Finance would then perhaps be able to do that. House Chair, you want to assist on something?
I thought you would allow all the questions. You note them.
Yeah.
And
yes,
then you will also have a space to
okay.
You can, otherwise, you are killing the debate.
No, it's fine. Thank you for that direction. That's why I asked you to sit here. But also, there are people who are technical, there are experts here. That we, technical experts, am I right? Is it technical? Yeah. Yes. People that are sitting around here. I hope that they will take the questions and at the right time, appropriate time, respond as well. Number two,
Thank you, Chair. I'm sure most of the questions are going to be about the timeframes and the committees, but just before that, a question for Advocate Jenkins. You spoke about how Parliament has input on the fiscal framework as distinct from the fiscal policy. In the Act, the fiscal framework is defined as includes estimates of all revenue, all expenditure, borrowing, interest, and the contingency reserve. To my reading, that's about as good a definition of fiscal policy as you can get. What is the difference? I mean, if Parliament has input on fiscal framework, surely that by definition affects fiscal policy. How are they distinct? Thanks.
Thank you, Chatterson. I think Chatterson, in the spirit of cooperative governance and also the role of Parliament over government, I don't think this act is actually assisting Parliament to do its oversight function. Because in most cases, it will say the minister review the recommendation of Parliament. It says nothing about the Parliament compelling the minister to implement any view of any reviewer. Chair, one aspect is the aspect that relates to the dichotomy between Parliament and the executive, because in the latter part of the presentation of the last presenter, it was speaking to that there should be a kind of a relationship or interface between the two. But in as far as I understand it, the dichotomy that one would expect is a dichotomy between the administration and the politicians. It should not be politician against another politician. There is no way that the minister will differ with other politicians. But at times, in most cases, you find that administratively, there will be some hiccups. So we don't need to be told by administrators to interact with our colleagues. We are subordinates, maybe, if one would put it that way. But what I'm trying to say, Jefferson, is that in the precept of what was said in Pulukwana, that there should be these priorities that government should look upon. But it's only the establishment of new departments that this bill is speaking to. But it doesn't say, in cases where Parliament feels that the priorities of government are not informed by what was agreed upon in Pulukwane, because that will be a recommendation, and the recommendation can be accepted or not, and there is space for the minister to reject or consider. When a consideration is made, it can be either positive or negative. So the compelling part of Parliament saying we want 1, 2, 3 having been done. Thanks.
Thank you, Comrade Lienga. Honorable Korenhoff.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two questions. I want to ask, is there obligation to introduce the legislation immediately in practical terms, or can it be delayed? And secondly, Ms. Mene referred to a task team, and if we've listened to her challenges in terms of the timetables, who is this task team?
I've got all my documents in front of me, Chair, so I'm comfortable. Thank you. Also, a word of thanks to the presenters for the thoroughness in which they did the presentation. It comes out in both presentations the whole question of time frames, and I want to ask, the present year plan of Parliament, is that cast in concrete? Can't we start earlier in January and end later in December? I asked the same question when we were inducted as members of the NCLP.
and I was looked at with big eyes without an answer. So I'm throwing a rock into the bush that we start earlier and we work a bit later. Also to show the people out there that we are serious. The other point is oversight periods. It was mentioned about we must go and do our oversight in terms of the act, which is correct. To get slots for oversight visits. A slot for a specific committee in a specific week, in a specific month. Lastly, a tracking mechanism to track down resolutions passed by the committee and adopted by the House. What tracking mechanism are there? In 2008, I was the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Safety and Security in the Northern Cape Provincial Legislature, and we submitted a handbook with regard to oversight for committees on safety and security with a tracking mechanism to track down resolutions and what happened to them. So there is an example how it can be done. It was done in cooperation with Professor Christina Murray from UCT. So that's the points I'm putting on the table. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I would like to appreciate the thinking that has actually gone up to where it decided that this sitting or this workshop takes place. It is indeed an informative information that we have received both from Uma Manene and your advocate. Thank you. It was an enlightening one, and we're able to differentiate some other issues. We're even able to see, as a member of a committee, what concerns or areas of concerns that needs to be attended to. And for that, I really thank you. And also to thank the House Chair, who started the road by highlighting to us that we also need to look at the Parliament's ability. And we also need to look at the realignment of the laws and the budget cycle. Now, looking at the speech from the House Chair and listening to what the two presenters have given to us, I am sitting here and I am saying I think it would be really a comrade chair, acceptable if we come out with tentative like deadlines as to when are we starting. To me that is critical, because if we don't start now or have tentative days as to when to start and with starting with what, whether the minister has submitted or tabled, has done the tabling, you know, we need to get that and come to those, because it's very critical. But having said that, if the House Chair indicates the ability of the Parliament and we are sitting with such very constrained time frames, you like torn apart as a committee member. How then do you deliver effectively? How then do you engage efficiently? Because do you have the ability to do that? There is this constrained time frame, there is this load of work. So I think maybe we need to sit down and say and start, you know, putting everything into the right shelf, Comrade Chair, and say we are starting with this, and this is how we're going to do it, and these are our time frames, because we're already sitting in August. And lastly, I was listening to the advocate, and I was just, you talk about the principles underlining the act. And I only got one. I don't know whether I missed you on the way, but I thought you were still coming with the rest. The first one was the constitutional obligation. Then I thought I was missing then because of the parameters and the timing. Then I don't know if those are the only principles you referred to, or maybe I missed that. I would really love if you can just add on that so that I do understand. So, yes, maybe to endorse, or I don't know whether to endorse, to what the House just said regarding the independency and the interrelationship. I hope what has been said by the chair, if the committees that are here, we take that into ready cognizance, because there's a very thin line between the two. The parliament, the executives, the there's more of interdepartmental, you know, they work hand in hand, the departments, but we're also there, and we according to the law, we need to have that independence. But how then? I think we need to come out and have even if it's a study group, as the committees, to check the two concepts. How then? How do you differentiate the two concepts? What is within that concept? How far do the parliament goes, and how far the executives comes or goes as far as the act is concerned? Otherwise, thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, the whole scenario, really, it looks very, very scary. You know, in terms of program, yeah. I mean, the manner in which the Act has been drafted, it doesn't leave. It's true that it is a constitutional provision, and Parliament has been clamoring for the right to amend money bills. I mean, it's part of its duty in order to be able to carry out its oversight. But I'm just worried about the time frames which are reflected here in the Act, because they give very little time to committees to be able to process quite efficiently. One understands and accepts the fact that, I mean, the whole institution is undergoing through some transformation. It's not only us, even the executives. There are quite enormous changes which are taking place. You know, one department split into two, into three, and so on and so forth. So with us as well, I mean, it is the same challenge that we are facing more or less, most in particular with the introduction of this legislation. But what I want to say, Chairperson, is that we won't be able to achieve if programming does not come on board. It leaves very little time. If the medium term, the MTPB has to be, I mean, to be delivered in October, end of October, and then committees do not have sufficient time, 30 days thereafter, to be able to respond, that is going to be a problem. So I would really agree with some of the proposals which are being mooted out here by Ms. Nene from committees to say that the parliamentary program has to be adjusted to ensure that we are able to achieve some of our objectives. I'm not worried about knowledge and capacity, because there are structures that are going to be set into place to assist members and so on, you know. So that is not the issue. The issue is the time frames now. And I'm also happy that the House Chair, Chair of Committees, is here, and that throughout all this scary experience that we are going through, that he'll be part and parcel of us, and that when programming is done, you know, because that is how I see it, Comrade Chair. It is the issue of programming. Because if you say public hearings, according to the legislation, there must be public hearings, which have to be instituted. And you don't have time to do that. It means you won't be able to justify the legislation itself. So I'm saying my appeal for now is just the issue of the synergy between the legislation and the parliamentary program. If we are able to do that, then I don't think we'll have a problem. But for now, in terms of the workload, it's really scary. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. I think then it's you're not alone. You're with your colleagues there. They will respond. Maybe the House Chair would like to respond first.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I think the areas which are said to be scared, I know Honorable Dan Munzizi, you come from defense, now you come to finance. It's a real transition in itself, from hardware things to financial matters. So don't be scared. The issues I think identified is capacity and ability, and I think in the afternoon the Secretary to Parliament will deal with the issues of the capacity and ability, or the Deputy Secretary will do it. Capacity and ability. And the issue of programming, I think they are noted, they've been noted. There are discussions going on, but there's contestation of views around that particular programming. Between those who want more plenary sessions, those who want more oversight sessions, and those who want more constituency sessions. So the three forces are contesting for that space. It's not easy. And therefore, the discussions are still going on. We hope we will reach some consensus at some point. The issue of budget, obviously, will still be an issue for committees in particular. Because public hearings also are, democracy is expensive in nature, and therefore the issue of the budget for committees to be able to fulfill their mandates around the issues of public hearings and so forth, it will be an effect that we cannot just ignore either. And the last, obviously, is the time frames as indicated by the presenters. And the one or two legislative aspects that we'll have to take on board. But otherwise, the law is in order, and we are not reviewing the law here. We are just looking at the practicality of the implementation, as indicated by honorable members. So we just have to accept the law as a necessary tool, a powerful tool for Parliament, and then that it will then begin to give that asserting of the authority and the mandate of Parliament. I think we have to embrace it positively and ensure, therefore, that it's a necessary tool. It will assert Parliament's mandate and its authority. So I'm just removing the fear that people have expressed. Now, in terms of the questions, the task team is made up of officials who are looking at the operational issues. The committee section has presented. The Secretary to Parliament office will also be looking at the issues of capacity. They are represented in the task team. The NEA table and the NCOP, they are also represented because they are procedural issues and rules that also ought to be looked and re-amended and give expressions into the of the law. So that is the task team, which then is it's combined task team of the two houses, led by the House Chairperson Committees in the NA and the Oversight Chairperson and Committee Chairperson, House Chairperson in the NCOP. So the three of us, therefore, forms part of that particular task team. The mandate of the task team is just really to look at the operational issues and also the time frames in the phasing in of the legislation. Once they've agreed on those issues, the submission will then be presented to the House Chairpersons, who will then take the matter. Obviously, we'll be consulting with the committees of appropriation and finance in the processes of the submission. And then we'll then take to the Joint Rules Committee, because that's where the whole policy emanated. So then they have to then, you know, finally approve. So, but we will have consulted in that way. So there's nothing about us without us syndrome or slogan does not exist because you will be consulted in the processes. So that is the nature of the trust team. The issue on the healthy relationships, I think it was more on the issues of the time frames, not removing a right to oversee the executive. It was more really if there could be that relationship that if it's 7 days and then there's corresponding 2 days by the executive and that's it. However, your robustness and then on the oversight, it's left to the politicians, that one. And I don't think Ms. Mene was referring that to the issues of the oversight. Parliament will remain robust. It will remain engaging. And then as other people have already coined another, an activist parliament. So those frame we leave to the politicians. They'll have to exercise their right and their mandate within that particular frame. The relationship is mainly will the ministers respond to that in 2 days or whatever. And if that aspect one. But if they don't, you have the power to reject. So that the legislation is giving you powers. If the minister after 2 days they don't respond or they dilly-dally and whatever, we reject. And they can't implement anything if we reject. But also, yours will then be the balancing of the service of delivery. If you reject, what happens to the service delivery? So the issue of the balancing will then be there, unfortunately, even though you are robust, you are engaging, you are an activist parliament, you feel this minister is undermining you, you can reject any budgetary item, but take care that the voter and the electorate and the people are not affected in the processes and the receivers. So, and I think that then, therefore, will guide the honorable members. Then the time for the NCOP and NA, Honorable Nguni was saying amend the constitution and add the size of the NCOP.
That's where the challenge is.
That's where the challenge is, yeah. So there are fewer, there are 54 members in session. It's only 90 when they've got special delegates. And then obviously they've clustered themselves, unfortunately, because of the size. But we can't change the law for now. There's no one who's mooting that idea. So we'll have to operate within what we have. The NA, what it did, it had given Appropriation Committee, the Finance Committee, and SCOPA 3 days a week to meet. They will be meeting on Tuesdays, they will be meeting on Wednesdays, and they will be meeting on Fridays. We've got an option to meet all those 3 days. And that is why we are calling for specialization within yourself. Dedication and committed members will then serve in those particular portfolio committees because of the load of work. How the NCOP is going to do it, I'm not sure. And so, Honorable Nguyen, I hope you take the discussion forward and then see whether you can have a corresponding dedicated team from your clustered portfolio. Because other members understand they belong to other committees and they are chairing some of the committees, but I don't know. The tracking mechanisms will be developing a tracking mechanism systems in this fourth parliament. And I think once we are ready, we'll let you know. And indeed, it will assist us in avoiding duplication, in tracking issues that get raised from the floor of houses, in tracking issues that are raised in committees and there's no compliance. It will ensure there's a compliance by the executive in everything that we take as a resolution by parliament. But committees also must make sure, therefore, that they produce reports that are adoptable, so that then once the houses adopted the report, it will have the effect of compliance on the executive itself. When are we starting? We are on the rollout now. The framework will identify issues that can be implemented immediately, but we have started the Committee on Appropriation. That is an implementation itself. In the NCOP, they've already have select Committee on Appropriation and Finance. That is implementation in itself. Now, the workshop is about more familiarization of the issues, expanding your knowledge base, engaging on the issues, so that by the time the phase-in program is
table before you in terms of the phasing in of those issues. We are all ready and indeed you are sharpened. And then the tool of oversight becomes effective. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. There might be issues that you might want to add on what the House Chair said. Are there any matters?
Thank you, Chair. I think there were one or two specific questions. There's one or two I would like. It's quite a difficult question. I'll try my best on it. But let me just start with the first one, which was discussed when the bill was drafted. What if the minister does not respond? Well, there's nothing that one can do to force the minister. What the act, the way the wording of the act works is you give the minister 2, 3 days or 4 days to respond. The minister doesn't have to respond. And in the interest of Parliament, it would be great to get that cooperative relationship where the minister say, I have nothing to add or have nothing to respond within a day if there's nothing. But if there is nothing forthcoming, then Parliament will have to wait for those days and say, well, we haven't received a response, and that should be included in the report to the House to say we've complied with the Act, but there was nothing forthcoming. You cannot do much more than that. There was a question on fiscal framework. Now, how does it differ from fiscal policy? Whereas Parliament may amend the fiscal framework, we're not allowed to amend fiscal policy. Yeah, this is a very difficult question, which was debated in the committee, being also aware of the constitutional responsibility for policy rests with the National Executive. My interpretation of that, or how that all played out in the end, is when one looks at the definition of fiscal policy, definition of fiscal framework in the Act, It sets out all those estimates that underpins your fiscal framework. In other words, when Parliament is, or in terms of the Act, we require the fiscal framework to be tabled. We want to see those details. We want to see the estimates of expenditure. We want to see the estimates of revenue. We want to see the estimates of sort of contingency reserves. Okay. Now, when one looks at the power then to amend that fiscal framework, and not touch upon fiscal policy, the distinction was drawn between the Maastricht Treaty, which sets up the European Economic Community before the European Community. And in that Maastricht Treaty, there's a 3% deficit policy written in to say you cannot spend more than minus 3% of what you've collected revenue so that you can go and borrow. And there's big reason for that to have such a deficit policy in there for capital expenditure especially. In terms of this bill, we do not go towards that kind of limitation to say 3%. Now, what do we use then? We look at Section 8.5 of the Act to see what we use. And we talk about in Section 8.5, there's an appropriate balance between revenue, expenditure, and borrowing. Now, in answering the question, what is the policy? I think that is what we will expect the fiscal framework to include, to say the policy is this kind of balance between revenue and expenditure. But within that policy, there can be then issues of this is the estimation of revenue and estimation of expenditure. And there the budget office will be able to step in to say we disagree with the estimates that's been given to us from the National Treasury. Or we agree, or we disagree, or we think there should be a change. And without affecting the balance, that balance between expenditure and revenue, one can start questioning those underpinnings, the assumptions underpinning the fiscal framework and work with that and amend that if one wants to, and to say, well, the balance is still appropriate, always keeping within those principles of fiscal discipline set out in Section 8.5. I would argue on a philosophical basis that is just to make this Act workable, and that is to ensure that Parliament has the power that the Constitution envisages to have to be able to amend money bills. But I'm sure there's plenty of economists that will say, well, that's not a pure separation between policy and framework. But one needs to, I would suggest, continually debate this issue. because the Constitution is clear who's in charge of policy and who has legislative powers. I'll come back to that on the issue of principles underpinning the Act. There was a question about the oversight role, the relationship between the executive and the legislature, and shouldn't it be between politicians and administrators? I would just keep with my role here in Parliament. I'm a legal advisor, and I look at the Constitution on a daily basis, and the Constitution requires that there's oversight over the executive, and that's a parliamentary function. Whether Parliament likes doing it or not, you have to do it. So that's there. And there are plenty of examples, practical examples, of where there has been differences of opinion between the executive and Parliament on issues. And one needs to resolve it either in a parliamentary forum or with a political intervention. Keeping in mind also the aspect of the building of institutions within a democracy, that politics might change, but there's the building of institutions in terms of the Constitution is what it is in, that the Constitution has in mind, and therefore we have this kind of relationship spelled out in the Constitution, and the Act goes on from there. There was a question on whether the Act must be implemented immediately. Yes and no. Yes, there's an expectation out there. People participated in this Act, in the drafting of the Act, so there's certainly an expectation out there that Parliament will implement this, and one will probably see, and in terms of our oversight model, Parliament wished to see more public participation in its processes, also in its oversight processes, which then informs the budget cycle and budget process and so on. No, we don't have to implement it immediately. We only have to implement it if we want to amend the budget. So that's the yes or no. I think it would be strange for Parliament just to sit back and say, well, we don't think we're going to amend the budget, so we're not going to implement. So there's all the reasons to implement. But as Honourable Bapela said, that if we do it piecemeal, we learn the ropes, we set solid structures in place, that would be to Parliament's benefit, so that we don't trip on the way there. So I would suggest that is the a way to go forward. But whilst we're waiting for that process to be completed, we cannot amend the budget. That's the bottom line. Honourable Chair, on to the question on the tracking mechanisms. You cannot. When one looks at the argument or the legal requirement in the Constitution that you have to have national legislation setting out a procedure to amend the budget, the question is, why do we need national legislation? Now, for me, what I'm thinking about that is there's a whole legislative process. It's a fixed system. Of course, you can amend legislation, but if somebody would like to know, particularly a member of the public, what can Parliament do or what can they not do, then they can look in legislation and find out exactly what there is. So there's a scope for predictability in the whole process. Therefore, the Constitution wants national legislation and not just rules of Parliament to set out a procedure for predictability. Now, once we've made that legislation, which is this Moneybill Amendment Procedure Act, we have to keep with this Act. So if we don't have procedures in place, which the Act requires, if we don't operate according to the Act, we cannot do what we can in terms of the Act. For instance, the issue of which I spoke about now, the fiscal discipline. We need to be sure that when say we amend the budget, that we have followed the procedure and given effect to those principles in that procedure. Otherwise, we will be acting contrary to what is written in this law. And in terms of legal jargon, it's called ultra vires, you're acting without authority. So this gives us authority to do what we want to do, but we have to do it in this way. Whilst we're working on setting up all the procedures in place and the mechanisms, the infrastructure in place written here, we cannot go from Parliament side and amend the Act, amend the Appropriation Bill, for instance. That's what I'm saying. So that's the necessity to do it, to be ready. Battle ready, as members of the military would say. So we have to be battle ready, although we're not preparing for a battle, we're just ready for that. Combat ready, sorry, combat ready. That's the word. That was the question. The tracking mechanism, that's part of the oversight and accountability model, so that's another thing. But it is, as far as I know, there's the principles underlying the act. Once again, apologies for racing through it. You know, I had the 20 minutes to do a lot. The most basic or the most fundamental principle underlying this act is Parliament must maintain oversight. The whole issue of amending the budget has to do with oversight. So when we amend the budget, we're doing it with that in mind. I really don't like showing or bringing up examples which put someone in a light, but there has been parliaments who took up this power to amend the budget, but for their own purposes. For instance, their own constituency purposes. With a constituency-based system, they would amend the budget, get money in their constituency, do good works, fix schools, fix roads, but create a big debt for the country. So there's this thing that the road to hell is littered with good intentions, and that's a good example. Now, that's not the principle underlying this act. The principle underlying this act is oversight, but coming with that is the issue of cooperative governance. In other words, we cannot then set policy when that is constitutionally given to the executive, but we do have the legislative power. So similarly, we cannot be held to ransom that we cannot exercise our legislative powers in terms of amending the budget. So those two balance each other, but fundamentally it's the oversight. The other principle I didn't mention is the issue of public participation. Now, in various court cases, the Constitutional Court, Supreme Court of Appeal, both of them have said that that is a principle underlying the Constitution. It runs like a wire through the whole Constitution, the issue of participatory democracy. We have a participatory and a representative democracy in terms of the constitutional court cases. And that is also something that runs through this act, where one has the public participation in many places. Whatever comes out of public participation must be included in the reports to the houses. So that's another principle besides those sort of triumphant three principles of oversight, legislative power and policy power, all within cooperative government, and you also have that public participation issue there. Honourable Chair, I think things that were addressed to my side have been dealt with. If there's something I left out, please remind me.
Before Mashile comes, there's this parliament until April this year in Malawi. For 5 years, they could not pass a budget. But what had happened is that a president crossed the floor to be an independent with 6 members. And then the president became the ruling party with 6 members. The majority party, which had won the presidency, became an opposition. And the opposition party that won and another opposition party then formed an alliance. So the 6 could not pass the budget because it needed a two-third majority. Majority members were in the opposition, in other words. And they just refused to pass the budget. But they will always concur on one thing, their salaries. Right, and each time the traditional leaders' salaries were threatened, then the traditional leaders would go and lobby each MPs wherever they were, go to their houses and say, just pass ours. And then the civil society would then every now and then demonstrate outside parliament for budget, you know, to be passed for work that ought to be done. But obviously, then the issue of the majority and the minority was an issue. I don't think we'll have that situation under the amendment, money amendment bill. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. I just wanted I'm happy that you remember that. And we hope that others will be reminded as well. Chairperson, I just wanted to be a little bit more deeper on this particular matter, as it has been raised that we may not be able to implement all the provisions of this particular act now. I think Ms. Mann, I think, indicated a particular section that can be implemented, because it doesn't, we are ready in terms of systems within. Come again? No. Yeah, but the fact of the matter is that what has been raised is that we are not ready to implement all the provisions because of some complications in terms of setting out. I think also even raise of capacity or whatever. But now what I want to know is that in terms of this particular legislation, if we fail to implement any part of it, that results in us failing to amend the budget. When civil societies, let me say like TAC or whatever, any other civil society, has been raising these matters that they want HIV allocation to be increased, and then as Parliament we fail to amend that and make sure that it is increased, can they take us as Parliament to court, or can they sue us? How do we handle that particular situation? Because there will be an act that empowers us, and they would not have been able to exercise our authority to indicate that whether we have listened or not listened to any particular civil society. How would we go about that? Can we be sued now for not actually listening to those that are advocating for a particular amendment to increase and to Parliament, and Parliament can assist them, and they believe that we have the power to do it? Is that possible? And if it is possible, how are we going to move around, or how are we going to dodge it or avoid it? Thanks, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. It's a bit clearer now what the intentions of the bill is. But Chair, I would like to check now the basis or what this actual budget is going to be informed. What form is it going to take? Because there are these departments that have been established, and they were sections within one ministry. Now, what form is it going to take? Is it going to be zero budget, or is it going to be incremental to the past, or is it going to be program-based? Because there is an element of public participation that has actually caused the ruling party to say there is a need for a department of rural development because of the importance. So have the considerations in as far as the importance of that been taken care of in this act to allow that whatever allocation is going to be made on fisheries, or on fisheries as it is separated from environment? Yes. Then the other issue on the issue of borrowing, was the treasurer was very explicit on this matter, to say you cannot postpone service delivery for the fact that there is this economic recession. You rather borrow, which was a good statement that has actually brought more hope on the voters. Then is there now any empowerment to that statement, or is it catered for in this act to say even if we take the route of borrowing, it's not going to be challenged maybe in any form. Then lastly, Chair, on this aspect of monitoring and evaluation, we have now a ministry that is solely looking upon that monitoring and evaluation. There are these bodies of oversight, your AG, because in as far as I'm concerned, the Auditor General's report is only coming out at the end of the financial year. Then it cannot be regarded as a tool for monitoring, but more of evaluation. So this is a direct response to that, the creation of this ministry. Then are there now enough powers that have been bestowed upon the Ministry of M&E to ensure that there is monitoring which is done during the progress of the work, then evaluation at the end? Thank you.
They will come in, but I hope that you don't forget yourself as Parliament.
Well, in terms of the monitoring, starting with that part, the budget office establishment is going to be a monitoring tool from within Parliament, in addition to advice, analysis, and so forth. And I think when the presentation comes in the afternoon, they'll also look at the capacity elements of the people within that particular office, because there's an explicit mentioning of people with financial skills, knowledge, and experience, including chartered accountant and so forth, so that you are at all given time empowered. The other role of the other office of the Ministry for Monitoring and Evaluation is it will be for the executive to assess itself in terms of performance. But Parliament is still playing a role of overseeing on those particular actions. But I want the Treasury to comment on the issues of the zero budgeting and what's going to happen. I know the current cycle is ending 2011-2012, but beyond 2012-2013, I'm not sure whether it will be adjusted fundamentally towards zero budgeting or what. I think let's allow them to comment on those particular issues. And as for this law, obviously, we the powers to amend and readjust, those are the issues that we will be looking at in terms of the phasing in. Hoshi, the issue of the implementation, any law that gets introduced and legislated, usually the ministers will have what you call regulations. And the regulations then regulate the phasing in of the law. And then that is why we're seeing a task team has been established to look at the issues to start implementing, and then a program of implementation, so that those who may say we're not doing our work can see that we're putting systems, we're putting capacity, we're putting whatever in place towards the implementation. And then in a phased approach, the chair, when he opened the meeting, said the Public Finance Management Act took over 9 years of implementation. The Municipal Finance Management Act took over a period of implementation. So with this law, there's nothing different in the phasing in type of an approach. And that is the line we're taking. While systems, institutions, and whatever have been established, we move towards that. And if indeed the whole target, I think, by the task team was that in the next financial year, we ought to be ready. So we're just ending this financial year up to next year, 31st. And in that other year, financial year, the instruments ought to be ready and ought to be in place. So that then, indeed, if situation arises towards the amendment, the direction then we are indeed ready and combat ready. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. But I think that because you are the big chair, you keep on wanting to usurp my powers, you know. But I will allow a Treasury to comment.
I want to hear them because...
Thank you very much for assisting. Sarina?
Chair, I wasn't sure. So the question asking if the type of budgeting was going to change or whether the budgeting for the new departments had been resolved. I just wanted to get clarity on that.
I think that maybe if you give your response from the latter, it will give more light
Chair,
of your comment.
Yeah. In terms of the type of budgeting, as far as I know, we haven't made any decision to shift from the type of budgeting that we're doing. But in terms of the changes to the structure of government as it is now, members will remember that the minister had made technical amendments where we created the new budget votes for those new departments. So where departments have established their, where DPSA and those departments have established their structure and they are up and running, those budgets will be tabled with the adjustments estimates in October. And where other departments are still lagging, that will be done in the next year's budget. So by the time we start the 2010-2011 budget, all the new departments will have their budget in place and should have their programs in place as well at that point. But again, it is a phased-in approach, and it depends on the pace at which the various departments are managing to get their programs and to get their staffing and budgeting and all of those structures in place.
Thank you very much. I think that clearly this question of implementation keeps on cropping up. But at the beginning of the meeting, we did indicate that the whole objective of holding this workshop is to try to come to respond to this question. When are we going to implement it? How are we going to implement it? The House Chair is indicating that on their side, there are processes that are in place to try to assist with the way of implementing the bill. But I would really like that House Chair would really like that maybe that process that you're talking about, we should try to move fast so that it's August now, in 2 months' time, there will be MTBPS. I think by the time we reach MTBPS, there must be clarity. So I would really like to see that your process and us as members come together so that we are able to together to clarify as to how are we going to implement it. But the suggestion really that we made at the beginning was that let's now just engage on the questions of clarity of understanding this team and the members, these committees, four of these committees, together. I count NSOP as two committees. We must come together and be able, as these members, I'm sure that Tasi may present to the committee too, so that it's the committees that say this is what they think that can be done now and what is it that we think that will be done at a later stage. We should not, what we call, really be pressurized now into taking decisions of how and when do we want to implement it. Let's listen. Let's understand the act. We'll be very clear with the act, and we have that meeting. It means that that meeting must be very soon, in consultation with all of us again. We set up that meeting so that we can respond to this question. It's us who will respond to the questions. No, no, nobody else. On that note, I'm sure we're going to be assisted as to where to now. The time is 10 to 1. You want to use your mic there?
Just a very short question, Chair, to the House presenters. Yeah. I just want to find out from the presenter. She's talking now. I just want to find out if the committees convey, you know, NCOP and NA, how much time will be saved, you know, for that NCOP can even have time to consider these changes when committees convey.
I can see the House Chair was busy conferring. I was conferring myself. Yeah, I'm not sure. Oh, the question was understood. Okay. Now, can you repeat, Comrade, the question?
Okay, so if the committees confer, how much time will be saved in the schedule of Parliament so that the NCOP can even have time to consider them? the changes?
Well, if the committee, the question that you're raising is that if the committees can confer on a number of issues like your profession, your budget, and blah, 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 how much will be saved?
Okay. And will be saved so that the SOP can have enough time to consider the changes.
Thank you. It's a Chairperson, it saves a lot of time. Let's say if committees are given 2 weeks to look at the issue and then they have to report. And if they confer, you will find out the NSOP can save a week. It may take the NSOP a week to report on that matter instead of 2 weeks. So it saves a lot of time. And even on issues, because you find out when committees, they confer, they decide even whom are they calling, even during the public hearings. Because in some instances, you may decide that whom are you calling at national level and whom are you calling at provincial level.
Thank you very much, Ms. Nene. But I keep on throwing back this question to the member, because at least we must answer these questions ourselves. In fact, I think that earlier we did indicate that there are a number of areas where the Act makes it compulsory for committees to confer. It's not about the question of a choice. It makes it compulsory. So that I think maybe the aim was also to deal with these questions of a time frame. Somewhere it indicates that they must hold public hearings together. So there's going to be, I hope that now, comrades, that you are at the NSOP, you don't hate those comrades, those members that were left at the NA, because you have to work with them, you have no choice. Now, it was on the lighter side. Honorable.
Mr. Chairman, Honorable Lees from the NCOP, thank you for the opportunity. The question that you've just been talking about is, in a sense, close to what I was going to ask, but slightly different. Ms. Manner indicated that the NCOP currently is not being given its 6 weeks to deal with issues. And she raised the question whether there's a need for those 6 weeks. Well, if the legislation demands the 6 weeks, then it must be given the 6 weeks. And if there is no need for it, then the legislation needs to be changed. So is there a move afoot to change that legislation or regulations which governs the 6 week period? And if so, presumably that will go through the processes. But I just need to know whether there is a move afoot to change that, because if that's what it is required, then we must get our 6 weeks. Then the National Treasury has indicated that the new department structure budgets, therefore, have been changed. Have they been changed in terms of this act that we're discussing today? Because what I'm hearing from Advocate Jenkins is this act cannot be used because it hasn't been implemented. Am I right in that? I just need clarity on that. Thank you.
My understanding of what Advocate Jenkins was saying, in terms of the Constitution, it requires that if you wanted to amend money bills, there must be an act. Now, you are saying now the act is there. So we can, what they call now, amend the act. But all that we assist with today is to say, what is it that can be amended now? I mean, can be done now, can be implemented now with immediate effect, and perhaps phased, as the House Chair was saying, over time. But I don't know if, in fact, there were two questions that were raised, one to Ms. Manner, the other one to Advocate Jenkins, and I see Tessa want to assist as well. I don't know, between the three of them, they will decide how they respond. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. When I I was referring to the Adjustment Appropriation Bill and the revised DORA that is tabled in October. I said the current practice then, when they're dealing with DORA, as much as a 6-week cycle was supposed to be followed, it was never followed. That was the practice. But the Mandating Procedure Act has been passed and has been signed by the President last year, which specifically indicate what should happen in all Section 76 bill. Now it's law, it's by law. It means that it's going to have an implication in terms of the time frames. Even the revised dollar now means that it has to follow the Section 76 bill. Therefore, that 9 days for revised dollar, it's not going to work for NCOP processes.
I wish I... who is responding now? Is it Advocate Jenkins or Lam Kessa?
No,
you want you?
I want to talk about the
money. Oh, okay. No, it's fine. Advocate Jenkins.
Thank you very much, Chair. The power of Parliament has to amend the budget. Depends on setting in place all these procedures in the Act. What we saw at the present Appropriation Act, before it was an act, the amendments to that, that was done in terms of Section 14 of this Act. It wasn't done, it was done by Parliament. But Section 14 is specific that you don't require to go through these procedures, so we don't need to set up all that infrastructure to use that power. And the trigger for that kind of amendment, which is a limited amendment, we spoke about it in the beginning of this session, it's an amendment to make a technical correction to the bill. And that is proposed by the Minister of Finance, and that is what happened. The Minister of Finance didn't move around any funds, or all he wanted to do was to set in place those departments within the appropriation bill so that one can later fill those gaps with the money. There were some opinions about it, but it was definitely of a technical nature. It was a lot of amendments that were made, but you don't need this specific act to put that in place. Chair, if I can just have 1 second. The issue of Parliament being sued because we're not putting this in place. You know, there's various aspects, but just shortly, it's very difficult not to be sued. Everybody has a right to sue you in terms of the Constitution. Whether they will succeed or not is a different question. Point one. Point two, there's an obligation on Parliament and the provincial legislatures, each House of Parliament, to facilitate public involvement, which means there must be public participation, whether oral or written. That's not... depends on the facts of the matter. So on that point, someone like TAC might say to Parliament, you didn't give me an opportunity to participate in the budget process, in considering legislation, or your other processes. But it's a difficult burden to prove in a court. But there again, Parliament's obligation to facilitate public involvement doesn't depend on this act or setting this act in place. This act actually just explains a little bit to Parliament what it should do in these processes. But there's always an obligation on Parliament to facilitate that kind of public involvement. But the effect of public involvement, that's also vague in the Constitution. The Constitution requires Parliament to be responsive. So one must provide reasons and enter into a debate. But it doesn't mean that a minority group can come forward. I say it with respect, a lot of respect. A minority group can come forward and demand that a law be changed. Parliament will have to take that decision, and of course, it's a political decision. Thank you, Chair.
I thought that you would also add that, in fact, in the past, Parliament has been forced to hold hearings in instances where it has failed to hear to hold those hearings. There's a number of occasions. So now, we'll not take a chance and not hold the hearings when we're supposed to do that, because other people will take up. I mean, there is precedence around this thing. Comrades, colleagues, officials, the time is it's 1 o'clock. I suggest that we take a break. We're informed that we're going to Old Assembly, but you can just. Because the Committee on Appropriation is hosting you. Mrs. Paso is over there. I hope that
all of you, when you go out, you drop something on her so that we pay for for a profession. We don't have an unauthorized expenditure on our side. We can pray for lunch now. Thank you very much. We'll be back at 2 o'clock.